Off the Ball.
GAA.
Hurling is in dreamland. Take out that match the weekend for Kilkenny. Hurling is just in paradise at the moment, lads. Like, hurling just keeps giving.
Join in the obsession.
Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Football on Off the Ball.
With William Hill. Who you got? 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.
This is News Talk.
Now then, you're welcome back. So I'm sure you've seen over the weekend, Emma Hayes' 12 years at Chelsea ended in fairy tale fashion. Fifth title in a row. 6-0 win at Old Trafford against Manchester United. A title won on goal difference in the end over Manchester City. Chelsea, 7 goals the better. Rachel O'Sullivan of Girls on the Ball is with us. Rachel, great to talk to you.
Good to chat to you too. How are you?
Yeah, very well. So, I mean, there was a point if you had pressed pause 88 minutes into Manchester City, Arsenal a couple of weeks ago, and City are 1-0 up in the 88th minute and will feel they have one hand on the trophy, and Chelsea obviously have their Champions League disappointment. You know, you could have formed a reasonable argument about lame duck manager and just wasn't to be for Emma Hayes and that kind of a year. And really, we should have just known better.
Quite. I think probably a little bit of a tale of City's season in a sense, because obviously that's the game where they lost it ultimately. It went out of their hands. Even if it had been a draw, they still would have won. The fact they conceded 2 goals in 3 minutes at the death as well. But, you know, when you look back across their season, 18 wins, 1 draw, 3 losses. But it's the games where they only won 1-0 or 2-1 or, you know, lost to Arsenal twice. They're the games where you think it could have been a little different. Had they got an extra goal, had it been a draw, it might have been a different story. And I think once you leave the door open, once you leave the door ajar for Chelsea, you just know they're going to come charging through it at 100 miles an hour.
And City, I mean, did go, I mean, akin to the men's team at times, who can go into these crazy runs. They did win 14 matches in a row between November and April, City. They were fourth last season. Missed out in Champions League for the first time in 7 years, and there was a sense of pressure on Gareth Taylor. He was given a one-year extension. That's never a good amount. Nobody wants a one-year extension. And I guess at the end of this year, I think they only really signed Jill Roard, I was reading, and she obviously had a very good season until injury interrupted that. But there was a sense from the City hierarchy of, okay, everybody, that was a disappointing year. Let's go again and see how we do. Will they be reasonably happy on some level with what is an improvement in the face of it or no?
It is an improvement. It is progress. You know, last season they dealt with a huge number of, you know, turnover, a lot of new players in, new faces, and they didn't win anything again. And I think this season, the way they kept pace with Chelsea the whole way, I think, you know, when you look at the injury that they had to Bunny Shaw at a crucial time, you might think perhaps had she still been fit for the final 3 games, could it have been a different story? Probably. And maybe that's something they'll look at now is the depth in quality. Do they have enough depth? Should there be an injury next season to keep them going? And I'd say that's something they're going to address, because arguably they didn't have a natural number 9 to step in her place. And of course, they've got really good front players in Chloe Kelly and Lauren Hemp and Mary Fowler, but a natural number 9 to step into Bunny Shaw's shoes when she got injured wasn't really available to them. And I think we praised them initially at the beginning of the season with the fact that they were consistent. They didn't have a huge amount of turnover at the beginning of the season. They'd obviously brought in Jill Roard, but that was about it. And they looked settled. They looked like they developed those relationships and things were clicking for them. And even when Jill Roard went out, they brought Jess Park in, who normally plays out in the wing. She was had a sensational end to the season in that position where Jill Roard normally plays. And I think, you know, it was just one or two slip-ups that lost them the title. And I think they are things they can address in the summer window.
To Chelsea and to Hayes, I mean, what was so striking amongst other things after the win was the extent to which Hayes said, she's wrecked. You know, it was like somebody had just reached the end of a marathon. She said, it has taken its toll. I categorically cannot carry on. I don't have another drop to give. Can't keep up with the demands from players on a daily basis in terms of their emotional needs, in terms of everything. And I have found it to be a grueling season. So she's off, obviously, to manage the US Women's National Team. Rachel, across the course of the season, has you sensed this level of fatigue about Hayes, or is it only now that she's kind of revealed it so openly that you can see it? Was this evident throughout the season?
Yeah, I think so. I think it was evident towards the end of last season, to be honest. You know, playing in so many competitions, going far in so many competitions is hard work. Like, you know, she said it herself that winning five times in a row, it might sound from the outset like they have no competition and it's easy. They're just that good. But that's not the case. You know, the league has gotten better and better and better each season, and it's getting harder and harder and harder to win it. And again, they're going deep into competitions where they've got games every 3 days this season. So yeah, it's been a slog. And to be honest, I did wonder, might she finish up at the end of last season, to be totally honest. I think she's then had to deal with the fact that the news came out about her new job at the US quite early on in the season. It was another thing for her to have to deal with. You know, she's used to things going well for the team. This season, you know, things were kind of falling off a little bit. The wheels were falling off here and there. Competitions are dropping like dominoes the longer they went on. These were new questions she kind of had to deal with in the media. That was a hard slog as well. She has a young son that she doesn't get to see a lot of, arguably, with the type of job that she's in. So, yeah, you could see it. It wasn't a huge surprise that, you know, she was feeling fatigued. And yes, I guess international football will allow her maybe a little bit more time in terms of it's less hands-on as regular, if that makes sense. Yeah. It's still going to be a hugely important job. The media are going to be as pressurized, if not worse, over in the US. The expectation is huge, but I do think it does allow her a little bit more of that time at home, time with her son, and less kind of, you know, driving in every day, 2 hours each way to Chelsea. Yeah, I can understand it. I think she really needed that step away from domestic football.
And in the men's game, for instance, international football would be considered a step down and a sense of, well, it's either an up-and-coming type manager making his or her name, or it's a manager who's had a glittering club career, then taking the cushy, less demanding job. But the standard would be seen as a drop. To what extent is that the case in the women's game at the moment, not least when you're going to the US?
No, I think even with the US not being number one, it's still one of the most prestigious jobs in football, not just financially, but in terms of, you know, they've always been seen as the best. They've been number one for so long. They've set the standard for so long. And the timing at which she's going into this job, it's not like she's stepping into a flourishing US national team who are number one and winning everything. She's coming into this US team at a difficult time. They're in this kind of transition period. Previous manager didn't maybe work out as well. I think maybe there was a little bit, maybe too much sentimentality in terms of players that he's hung on to and maybe not investing enough into the younger players. Emma Hayes is a different kind of manager, really good at bringing that young talent through. And it's a tricky time to step into that role, but it's a role she said from a young age she dreamed of. And she spoke about times where she managed in the US and she kind of jokingly with some of her staff like stepped out onto the pitch as though she was stepping out onto the Olympics and leading the US team. So this is a dream come true for her. And it in women's football would be seen as one of the most prestigious roles.
Yes. Okay. So club or international, regardless, this is just elite. Because I think in men's, for instance, if you ask people to name the best football teams in the world, it would be quite a way down the list before they get to an international team.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I think, you know, we're probably moving that way in women's football. I think, like I've touched on, the US are maybe not at the level that they used to be, but you would still name, say, the Spanish team pretty high up in the best teams in the world. So, yeah, the US are still in and around there. They still have it in them. They've got some unbelievable quality coming through. And I think she'll be stepping in there with the expectation of getting them back to that top rank.
I read an interview with her, it's a couple of years ago now, but she walked in as Chelsea manager 12 years ago and I don't think she had an office on the first day.
Yeah.
And now look where we are. I mean, 12 years is about a blink of an eye in a very long time. How do you try and explain to someone who hasn't watched, you know, each year in granular detail, the extraordinary job that she's done and the impact that she's had on the game in the UK, Rachel?
Well, I think turning a team that were struggling, you know, at the bottom, languishing at the bottom of the table, to winning five WSL titles in a row, winning seven in total, FA Cups, Conti Cups, going deep into the Champions League, you know, into knockout stages. I mean, I remember Chelsea regularly getting knocked out of the Champions League by Wolfsburg, and they just kept chipping away season on season, improving and improving. But it wasn't just Chelsea that improved season on season. It was everything else. They have their own place in Cobham, you know, their own training facilities. They've now got King's Meadow, which is their ground. But then alongside that, they've raised the bar for everybody else to have to keep up. And if you want to challenge Chelsea, you have to be investing in all of those areas around the game on the pitch. And I think they've forced a number of teams across the WSL to do that. She also is, you know, massively the big spokesperson within the WSL on a number of different issues, whether that's, you know, tracking periods, understanding the importance of tracking that, whether it's improving facilities, whether, it, you know, she speaks out on a number of issues and is not afraid to do that and to challenge people to improve things. And I think the game itself, the WSL itself, wouldn't be where it is if we didn't have Emma Hayes for these last 12 years.
What do those around her or who've worked under her consider to be her great attributes as a manager?
I think she's very good, like, individual player manager. I think it's a very hard thing to have such a high quality of players in her squad, all of varying personalities, all require different types of management. And she seems to keep everybody happy, which I think is a really, really difficult job. You know, I've been at a number of kind of keynote speeches she's given where she's spoken about you might have a player who needs all of the detail, needs to understand everything about a game plan. And then you've got another player who wants as minimal information as possible. And they're the kind of the breadths either end of the scale, and you've got all the other players in between. And I think the way that she's able to manage that level of quality of player, keep everyone happy and keep them playing at that standard, driving that standard for so long, has to be one of her best attributes.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just the most extraordinary career. And she, you know, household name by dint, I suppose, of the punditry on ITV as well, where she blitzes in every two summers and is exceptional and then disappears again. So, you know, she has that profile as well, I think, which is so important to the women's game. Household name, you know, it's not like the league is littered with those.
No, and, you know, maybe now she's an international, we might get a little bit more of her on that kind of analysis side of things. I think she's been a real breath of fresh air with regards to that. She's so interesting to listen to when she speaks about football, whether it's in a press conference or analysing a football match or at an event. She just speaks so well about football and makes it really accessible while also giving you some really detailed insight, which is not an easy thing to do. So, yeah, I think she's got a number of different hats that she can pull on. And hopefully in the international style of, you know, managing, we might be able to see a little bit more of that from her.
Remember back in March where the controversy erupted when she shoved Jonas Eidevall? Was that entirely out of character and maybe a symptom of the pressure, or would Emma Hayes have that in her locker down the years?
No, I think that was pretty out of character, to be honest. Right. You know, I think she was handling a lot of, she'd become used to, I don't want to say the darling of the media, but I think she had a relationship with the media where she knew how to use the media in the same way that she knew the media would come to her for things. And things were difficult this season. They just lost the Conti Cup to Arsenal. She hates losing to Arsenal. And there's a lot more pressure on her this season. And as we touched on, she was fatigued. She was feeling it was hard work. So I do feel that was out of character. I was really disappointed by that. I'm not going to lie. I saw a lot of people trying to justify it. I don't think there's any real justification for that. But she is the kind of manager who will take the pressure off her team in difficult moments. And we've seen that a number of times this season. And, you know, arguably no one really talked about the fact that Chelsea lost to Arsenal in the Conti Cup final, did they? They all spoke about the push. So, you know, there are moments, and we've seen it throughout her career, where they might get knocked out of something, or she'll have a comment, or she'll say a thing, and that becomes the focus rather than perhaps the result.
Yes, interesting. A glance at the table would tell anyone there's a fairly ensconced big three. We have the top two on 55 points apiece, and then 50 down to Arsenal, and then a bit of a gap to the rest. Manchester United won the FA Cup, they finished fifth. Liverpool fourth, Spurs are there in sixth. How close are the chasing pack to turning that big three into a big four, do you think, Rachel?
Well, you touched on it there, how 12 years is kind of the blink of an eye, you know, and I think because the game is growing so fast, we expect things to improve quickly. But like, these things take time when you've got new managers in, new players in. I think this has been the most competitive WSL season. I think we say it every year. But when you've got Liverpool beating Chelsea, beating Manchester United, beating Arsenal, you know, you saw Spurs take points off Arsenal. I think that's a really important thing to start happening, where the top four or the top three are no longer comfortable going into matches. You know, they don't look at a table and go, we're grand, You know, anyone below, say, 4, we should be fine. We'll win these games. You know, Manchester City lost to Brighton. Arsenal lost to West Ham. Manchester United drew with West Ham. You know, there were results coming in all around the table that would be deemed a surprise. The fact that Spurs got to an FA Cup final with their manager, who's only been in the job a season. You know, I think there's a lot of growth across the league. I don't want to get too excited like we've done with previous teams who climb up the table and then maybe come back down again. But it's really important that we're seeing these teams no longer be afraid of the top three. And it's when they start to get that consistency by beating the teams in and around them that they can start challenging, I think, for the top.
Yes. And just a final one on the league at large. I mean, it's notable that it's at Old Trafford where Emma Hayes signs off. You know, I mean, these kind of venues now becoming part of the league's landscape, which is great. When we talk about the league over the last number of years, phrases like rapid growth are used and exponential growth. And so I'm curious, is that sense of pace of growth still very much there, or has it tapered off at all? I touch this year because I guess it can't keep rapidly growing forever. There'll be peaks and troughs. But do you still get that great sense, Rachel, that it's improving almost year on year in all senses?
Yeah, it's still been a record-breaking year in terms of attendances, and average attendance has gone up from about, I think it was about 5,500 to 7,000 this season. Okay. But I agree, we are going to come to a point where we're going to have plateaus. It can't maintain this level of growth. And I think we just need to not panic when it plateaus, because it's going to be absolutely natural. I think we'll come back to seeing, I think we have to factor in that we had major tournaments back to back, which has massively helped push this growth. But I think we'll start to have little plateaus and spikes when it comes to major tournaments. But there is still very much growth there. I think Arsenal have shown this season getting over 300,000 to across six games at the Emirates. They're now moving to potentially 8 WSL games and 3 Champions League should they qualify for the group stages. If they don't, they'll have 11 WSL games there. You know, so there is growth. We're seeing teams like Manchester United, for example, over 28,000 turning up for that Chelsea game. Chelsea selling out Stamford Bridge for the first time. There are still records to be broken, but that level of growth isn't sustainable, and that's natural. So I think we can expect that, but it shouldn't be seen as an issue.
Yes, okay, very good. Listen, thank you so much. Great to get your perspective on it all. Rachel O'Sullivan from Girls on the Ball. Thanks, Emil. Rachel, cheers.
Thank you, cheers.
Football on Off the Ball.
With William Hill. Who you got? 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.
This is News Talk.